Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Thick Ass. This is episode number 229. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week is Dr. Jonathan Fast. John, how you doing, man?
Lee, you ready?
I'm ready.
What the dealio?
I'm Lee Pill. Yo, you don't even have to introduce me. Let's just do it.
That was awesome.
I know.
What is that, like Bacardi?
Taking your job.
Do it.
Taking your job.
What? This is truly the apocalypse.
No, Kevin, it's ancient aliens.
Dude, ancient aliens.
They have come back.
Off topic. Dude, we're screwed. They've been testing on us for years. I'm just like, all right, so anyways.
You're never going to sleep again.
We're back after our hiatus for season 8 of the FitCast. We got some great new plot lines and arcs that are going to be lighting the way for our glorious 8th season. Hopefully we'll get picked up for 9 and 10 as well, so we will be the longest running fitness podcast of all time on iTunes.
And just a spoiler, it was all a dream. And we're going to end up walking into the bathroom. And Kevin will be in the shower and nothing happened. It was all a dream.
Actually, we were on a holodeck. One day I'll learn how to say that word. Anyways, we got some great stuff lined up for you on the show today. Quickly, just want to mention a couple things. First off, that it is kind of like the 3-year anniversary that John and Lee have been permanent hosts on the show. So congratulations to you guys for surviving this long.
Through budget cuts, downsizing, we're still here, man.
Yeah, we even tried to recast John like twice.
Yeah, at least twice that I know of.
Irreplaceable.
This guy named Escobar, who I thought was great, but unfortunately he got deported. So
he had amazing charisma there.
Escobar. Anyways. Other cool stuff. Guys, I just bought an Airdyne bike today on Amazon.
Oh my God, did you?
Golden.
I just heard about someone that did that.
Gold box deal of the day. So I picked up one of those.
That's pretty good.
So that will be arriving here on Thursday. Can't wait to do that.
I need
that.
To get me one of those. You know what? I think I'm going to buy me an Airdyne.
Lee,
today.
It's the cheapest I've ever seen them, and there's still some left. So we've been doing some cool heart rate testing stuff with some literature
Boyles.
At Boyles. And we've been talking about in our staff meetings on Body by Boyle online. So it's if you kind of check out that stuff, you have an idea of what I'm talking about. But some interesting stuff that we're looking at in terms of how we modify our conditioning for our athletes for maximizing performance, obviously. So hopefully we'll have some cool stuff. But we're kind of testing it in staff right now. And we're going to talk about it this Thursday in our staff meeting. So, I figured, you know what? What's that, Joe?
I was going to say, I remember Bill was talking about it when I was there, and I'm the whole time I'm like, oh my God, that's so low tech. You're like so old. And then and it's like, oh my God, he was totally right. This thing is like hell on wheels.
Oh, yeah, ever since the 70s, right?
Yeah, that's like old school tech, and it's like, guess what? It still sucks to this day. It sucked then, it sucked now. That thing is amazingly awful.
Well, we've been doing like we have our staff lifts on Thursdays, and I've been doing like a lot of like 5-mile bikes and trying to get my time better. So it's kind of a cool thing to actually have one in the apartment. Probably going to scare the crap out of my dog, considering
you think
what he does with the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, and then he's got to love that.
I was thinking about just drawing like an angry face on my vacuum cleaner just to make it full effect and then record that. Just post it up on YouTube. Dog versus vacuum cleaner. That's why I've always wanted to get a Roomba, but I know my dog will kill it. I just left it in there with him here, like I'll find out, you know, it's in 18 pieces. But some other cool stuff. Remastered that Dan John squat video that came out back in 06 when I was at the, I think it was the Los Angeles Strength Seminar way back. My first trip to the West Coast with like Dan John, Eric Cressy, Mike Robertson, and Julia Ladowski was out there, John Berardi, great lineup. And Dan actually presented like at like 8 o'clock at night after everyone went out to dinner. He's like, if you guys want to learn some awesome stuff, you know, about what I talked about today, come back at 8 o'clock. And this is Dan John. Like we came back at 8 o'clock and we spent an hour kind of going over, you know, how to correct, you know, squatting and deadlifting patterns, proper Olympic lifting, and like some serious voodoo type stuff that will clean up, especially like your squat pattern, like the Mr. Universe Buddha Belly thing was like the first thing that actually helped me get proper squat depth. So you can check that out on YouTube. It's just at youtube.com/thefitcast. It's the first video up there at the top. And I think on it was on Google Video originally, and it got over like 60,000, or maybe it was like 100,000 views on Google Video. And even in the last month that it's been up there, it's already at 3,000 views. So it's great stuff.
The thing about that video is I was talking to Sam Lay. Kev, you probably know him actually, but you know, he's a strength coach. And we were talking about simplifying your message. You know, when you talk, like just the art of teaching and how you can take very complicated, complex ideas and boil them down to something so simple that anyone can understand. That is a master work of simplifying a message, that video. It's like it doesn't matter who you are, what your experience is. You watch that video and it is the most complicated concepts, so simple that you could sit a 10-year-old down and they'd be squatting perfectly. You know, it's an amazing video.
Then the final thing that I want to quickly mention is that we will have some cool stuff to talk about in a little bit.
All right. Not yet.
Yeah. So
suckers. Yeah. Thought we were going to do it today.
And there's some good stuff in the off topic about ancient aliens. And what you guys, you really need to know what's going on. You know, open your eyes. So we're going to start off with a roundtable talking about the FMS feedback that we got, which I think we talked about like 2 months ago.
Right. It was like the last cliffhanger. Cliffhanger. Exactly. Good call.
No death threats from the FMS community so far, which is great.
Because John conducted a very thorough execution of his knowledge.
No, but somebody called me out. They said on one of my videos, they said I got a zero.
Damn. Are you serious?
No.
Awesome.
I would have given you a zero.
That's really funny.
Kevin actually loaded midway on his FMS.
I could just tell you're in pain. Zero.
We're all geeks for laughing at that.
All right. So, John, why don't you head this one up, because you kind of, organized all the feedback that you got. And we also got some iTunes feedback as well. So why don't you take it away?
Sure thing. We wanted to do a kind of a part two, because we got a lot of amazing feedback from a bunch of different people. And there were a lot of questions that I guess we left a lot of questions open. You know, we answered some, but then we raised more questions. There were a lot of people that agreed with us, you know, with what we were kind of saying, and as far as our look at the literature. And basically that's all we were really trying to do, is it's not really an opinion on the FMS, but more of like, well, this is what the literature is saying so far, and what do we think about that, the literature, you know, study by study. So there were people that agreed with our takes. There were also people that were certified with FMS that had follow-up questions, you know, asking, is it still worthwhile to use, you know, and what would Gray say? Which was an interesting question to me, because I personally hoped that Gray would basically agree. I'm sure that he'd have a couple contentions or a few points here and there. But like I said, we weren't really trying to say like, oh, I don't like the FMS. It was more of like, what do we know about it so far? And with this knowledge, how can we use it, or do we want to use it yet? I mean, that was really all we were talking about. So, you know, Gray, to anything that I've ever really seen, is pretty intellectually honest. I mean, he obviously believes in what he's doing, and he believes in his, you know, product, his methodology. But I really do get the sense that from Gray, and I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but I get the sense that he really, you know, believes in what he's doing and wants people to use it because he believes that it's worthwhile. And that's all you can ask for, you know. But I think that he also will acknowledge its limitations and its shortcomings, and will absolutely come out and say, don't use the FMS for this. You should use the FMS for that sort of thing. So I think that it would, you know, certainly be an interesting conversation, but my hopes would be that there's nothing personal in what we did. It was simply analyzing evidence, and he does that too when he talks about it. So that was my take anyway. But other people were asking about the FMS, and now they were unsure, you know, should they go through certification? Should they purchase it given their population, you know, that they work with and things like that? So it was a lot of feedback, and a lot of really good feedback and interesting feedback. And we only had one negative iTunes review, so that was great. So going into what we did, I think it was worthwhile to try to explain what we were trying to do and how we looked at the evidence and why we did that. And I think that one of the most important things is that when you look at evidence or you have a belief, the important thing is to try to prove that you're wrong, not that you're right. And as an example, right after that recording, I actually had a discussion with Brian Chung. Lee, what's his damn website? We just went through this last time.
Yeah, went through this. Hold on. Give me, you keep talking and I'll pull it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Brian Chung, he's a medical doctor and a researcher. And
evidence-based fitness.
Evidence-based fitness,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, man.
There you go. Boom.
You did it.
Shout out to Brian. And so he and I were having this. We had like a four-hour discussion over Skype. We were just like typing and, you know, going back and forth. And I was actually arguing exactly the opposite of basically what I said that week on the FitCast. He was taking a very conservative approach, and I was being more liberal about the use of the FMS. And he started listening to the episode, and he writes to me, he goes, you know, I'm really surprised that you argued how you did. And I was like, oh, yeah, for sure. I was just, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate today. And he, you know, cursed me for wasting his time for hours. But the point was that if you want to understand a topic and you're interested in using a technique or looking at a certain amount of evidence or whatever, not only is it important for you to understand both sides of things and to understand why you may be for or against something, but to prove that you're wrong, that whatever your belief is, if it's just a belief, then you don't really want to prove that you're right because you already think you're right. What you're looking to do is prove that you're wrong. So anyone that listens to the FitCast obviously knows that I'm, you know, at least sensitive to biomechanical explanations. It sort of appeals to me. I do think that there's value in biomechanics. But the last thing that I want to do as a clinician is just look for stuff that's going to support that belief, because it's very easy to find those things. And if you look at psychological papers, they'll say this over and over again, that a person's individual belief will cause them to find more fault with something that disagrees with their beliefs, and to find more praise for something that agrees with their beliefs. And all you're doing is you're feeding into a pattern where you're not really learning and you're not really growing. So for me, as someone that would love for the FMS to be, you know, an industry standard and to be evidenced and to be used, what I'm looking for is the stuff that would prove that wrong, because I'm already going to have an inclination like, no, maybe I should use this. So that's the strategy. And that's how I think that's the take that we all have when we look at evidence. And I think that that's an important lesson to understand why we were arguing the way we did, and also how we formulate our ideas. So when you look at evidence, the take home message is science is about evidence. It's not about beliefs. And when you do that, you're going to always be honest with yourself, and you're going to know that if something goes through the rigor of your investigation, that it's probably still worthwhile, therefore, because if you're only trying to prove it right, that's an easy thing to do. But if you're trying to prove it wrong and it still exists after the fact, that's how you look at evidence. And that's how you come to good, decisions when there may not be the greatest of evidence around. So is it worthwhile? That was the question that we kept getting over and over again. So what would make it worthwhile? Well, it makes it worthwhile if it does what it says it does, if it has content validity, if it claims that it will identify injury and it can affect that injury based on that knowledge of identification. And so far, like we discussed, there's reason to suspect that that may not be the case, or at least that we don't know enough about the populations in question to know if it can do that for all populations that are being discussed. And that's an important point, I think, because
I mean, John, do you think it's still worthwhile as just a, you know, a quick testing tool to give you an idea of where people may be having mobility issues, or, you know,
it possibly, but possibly not. And I think that the problem becomes we already have measures of mobility. So if we're introducing a new measure of mobility,
okay, fair enough.
So you know
mean
what I mean?
Like, so you mean like overhead squat compared to, let me go through my quick FMS. Why every time we do these FMS things, I like completely just blank out. Like, I'm so fired up. Okay, so you get
overhead squat, the push up.
Like you do your inline lunge. Like
inline lunge.
So you're talking like because those are new movements that it's not, you know, worthwhile as a package?
No. So in other words, it's like if we would have to then – it's always about the gold standard, right? It's always about – how we do something currently versus this new protocol. How does the new protocol stand up to
the scoring system?
Well, not the scoring system. It's more like if I use an overhead squat and I determine that you've got mobility issues, well, there's already a determination for range of motion in the hips.
Yeah.
I can take internal external rotation. I can take, you know, straight leg raise and measure that. And we have numbers that are validated every, you know, the College of totally. Orthopedic Surgeons and right. So if I simply say you have mobility issues, excuse me, just based on watching your movement, mm-hmm. but I don't know that actually corresponds, you know, what does that mean? Does that mean that your mobility issue is because you have an internal rotation deficit
or because stability issue?
Right, or your hamstring's yep. tight. Now the FMS isn't really designed to do that though. The FMS says we're going to look for asymmetry. And we're going to look for, right, like the inability to perform this movement. And that movement inability may be based on mobility and it may be based on stability. Mm-hmm. But okay. we're just going to look at the movement and score it.
Cool.
And yep. not make a comment. Right. So it that's fine. But that and that's what it should be. That's a screen. That's what it should be doing. It shouldn't be giving you numbers because that's not a screen. That's more of an evaluation with hard, concrete numbers. But if it doesn't actually translate to anything, then it doesn't matter. It has no value. Because then you could say the evaluation, like I've said, I use an overhead squat in my evaluation process typically, but I will also evaluate their quality of a loaded squat because I'm going to be using a squat in some way, shape, or form in my training. So I want to see how they actually squat, and I want to see how they do that under load because that can also reveal problems. The overhead squat I do use to identify mobility issues, but I go further after that fact because and quite frankly, because I can, you know.
Totally, I think it kind of steps back to is like, you know, maybe the FMS is just like, you know, the new trainers or the new coaches, you know, first mm-hmm. step into assessments.
Right, and it may very well be. I think that when we – and this goes back to what we were discussing before. That's fine, except that if it's a step into evaluation, that's technically what it's not supposed to be used for. But I agree with you. It's totally being used for that.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't have validity for the population that you're using it for, so if I don't know – like I've seen, you know, I've seen running coaches using the FMS, and I've seen you know, personal trainers with you know, general population, elderly population using FMS, all different kinds. And, you know, I've seen, you know, chiropractors and physical therapists talking about using the FMS, and none of these populations have been validated. The only thing that even comes close to validation would be the professional football players. So there's no way that a professional football player goes through the same activity and motion as grandma who's being trained by the personal trainer, as an endurance runner. It's just it's night and day. Now, the basis of the idea is that these are basics that everyone should be able to acquire. These movements and positions, regardless of sport, regardless of activity, somehow denote your musculoskeletal health. Mm-hmm. But because that hasn't been validated yet and we don't actually know if that's true, you can't say that. It's a theory. It's not a fact.
Okay.
Okay.
And that, and therefore that's why it becomes a little bit more important to evaluate it. But otherwise,
okay,
I mean,
well, I guess my question would be, would you rather have a Joe Trainer or Jane Trainer, you know, gets a new a client, you know, this is someone that maybe just got their certification. You know, I still think, you know, as maybe there could be some flaws in the system. But I think doing a screening like the FMS will still allow you to look at some, you know, simple things like asymmetries, you know.
Can I input?
Absolutely.
That's what their certification was for. In my personal opinion, that's what their certification was for. In ASM, I was certified. It was my first certification. There was assessments. There was postural distortion assessments. There was mobility advancements. There's all types of things in the certification. And I feel like what one of the problems that we come into, and this is just for discussion's sake, is that so many things that the general trainers do, general trainer population trainers do, is guided by and influenced by athletic trainers and by trainers working in like the athletic industry versus trainers or people involved in just general population, because it's not as point blank or it's not as sexy or it's not advanced or whatever that kind of takes place. But I think as far as screening goes, I think that I know of at least three certifications that I've been a part of that each of them have a basis of assessment. And not to say that a trainer couldn't continue on with their education, but I think that that in a way answers the question for me.
I think that's an even better distinction that you made, because the NSCA, the CSCS had none of that.
Yeah, none of it. Yeah. And but what's interesting, and this gets technical, and I was going to talk about it anyway, so that was a good segue, Kev. When you deal with anything, when you deal with training, when you deal with evaluation, testing, prescription, whatever, there's a risk-reward basis that you make these decisions on, right? I mean, we could name a bunch of exercises that we feel may be more risk than they're worth, especially when there are other things that we can use in place of them. So a Smith machine squat, I don't think any of us would do this because we feel that there's a risk to the spine. And especially when we could do a regular squat, which we feel is safer and more biomechanically sound and whatever. So the real discussion becomes, is there the possibility of risk in using the FMS? Now, I think no, but it's there. Even some of the studies you look at, they do point out, oh, you know, this person, you know, one person had a muscle strain and that was gone in like a day or something. You know, they got sore from using it, whatever it was. But there's obviously there's a cost in using the FMS. We would assume that cost is exceptionally low.
Yeah.
But the when we're and this is just from the standpoint of now clinical guidance, but you have to understand the risk and reward to something that you're using. So is it the possibility of causing injury with the FMS? You know, what happens when you alter adaptation? The body adapts to things. So we're talking about, well, the mechanics. If the mechanics are flawed, if there's asymmetry, then this person will be injured. But if this is something that's longstanding and they're, you know, an athlete that's been playing with this for years, I don't know that that means that if I fix this, I may have actually made it worse, because they're used to playing in such a way that my fixing it actually predisposed them to an injury because they didn't adapt on the field once they adapted
that's,
their
that
body.
That is how they that's learned it. That's how they've been. Yeah, I know. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's where you get to kind of hope. You get to kind of hope that is, you know, they're being coached by someone that, you know, has an understanding of that. I mean, you see it in baseball players and overhead athletes so all the time. You know, that's absolutely where they get their gift to be able to throw a, you know, a 12, like a 12 to 6 curveball. Like, you know, it's
right.
It has absolutely to happen.
And again, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here too, because I don't actually believe that this is the case, but I cannot say for a fact that it's not. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that it is, and I would make an argument against anyone that would say that. But it's a legitimate point to say, well, what's the risk? You know, what if, let's say this, and let's use this hypothetical, which is absolutely possible. Let's say that the FMS actually does nothing. You know, we don't have it validated yet to that extreme. So we could actually
back up for a second. What do you mean by not doing anything? You know, not giving us any kind of information that is beneficial towards training. Okay.
Exactly. It may be the case, because we don't have any studies right now that compare standard to the FMS, right? So what about the evaluation process that people have been using already? What about the training process that people have been using already? FMS is not the first attempt at training.
Yeah.
Right. So because we don't know what the difference is it possible the FMS does a worse job? Is it possible that the FMS does nothing, and therefore by training along this logical progression, we may actually be increasing the odds of a longer-term injury? And again, I'm not saying that it does,
yes,
nor do I actually believe it, but we don't know for fact. So if I'm a professional football coach, you know, strength coach, and I implement this without understanding, you know, just boom, I'm just going to implement this, I'm running a risk. And again, we may say that that risk is probably slim to none, but it's a legitimate risk. And that's how you have to evaluate things from a clinical standpoint. You do have to be aware that there is the possibility that this could go wrong. Brian actually brought up, I thought it was a very interesting example, and it is apples to oranges, so I'm not going to claim that this is truly FMS, but he brought up, he's a surgeon by training, and he brought up a knee replacement, you know, technique using the same device, the same materials, whatever. But for whatever the reason, the new technique had all kinds of negative outcomes. And yet it was the same materials. It was basically the same approach. Like, all the surgeons did it and thought that this was fantastic. It limited the amount of surgical time, you know, whatever benefit it gave them. And yet they were having patients coming back a year or two later with complete rejections. And no one saw that coming, because it didn't make any sense, and yet there it was. That always exists, and you definitely see that. You see that with medicine, and you see that with drug and pharmaceutical things, and you can absolutely see that. Look at what we think now, the sneaker industry, right? 20 years ago, the idea of training barefoot was blasphemy. Everybody knew that sneakers reduced your injury, and sneakers made everything better. And now we're starting to look at it and going, actually, that wasn't the truth. We don't have any evidence that happened. And we're starting to think it may have made us a little bit worse. So that's another example of something that was absolutely condoned by the industry. We're going to have performance sneakers and high arches and high tops and all these things. And now we're starting to re-look at that and wonder if we were wrong. So is the FMS going to do that? I mean, I sincerely doubt it. But it's worth exploring that idea and understanding, if I don't know, then I can't say that concept is untrue. I can theorize and say it's unlikely, but I can't say it's untrue. And therefore, you have to, you know, make that judgment call and say, do I believe that this will help? And why do I believe that? And why do I believe that it has limited to no possibility of hurting? And you can make those arguments, but you do need to make those. You can't just say, I'm going to get it because everyone's getting it. You know, you have to think through it logically and decide for yourself what you think the risk or rewards are. Personally, I wouldn't make those arguments, and I don't think that it will injure. I can't imagine that, you know, an athlete through general performance training somehow would be injured by the FMS and not through, you know, a deadlift or something. But that's just my opinion on it. I can't say that for fact. There's silence in the room.
I was waiting for
someone.
I was waiting for Kevin to reset. I guess maybe Kevin left. I don't know, but
he did.
Yeah.
So what I would personally do, you know, is this worthwhile to use? And that was that other question.
Let's say this, and we didn't, cause I know we had the call that we recorded, but like lost a little bit. So yeah. I'm a tad confused. Did we give an alternative? Did we give something for people that they could utilize, or something that they could do along with or with it, so that we're not just criticizing and also offering up some sort of solution? And
well, that's what I think is interesting, because if you were to ask me what, let's say the FMS does not work.
Yeah.
If that's the case, well, I think first and foremost, it's because it's based primarily on biomechanics. That's yeah, the basis of it. And we know that biomechanics are not the best way to evaluate injury prevention.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, we all, probably like it to some extent because it's what we can affect as strength coaches, as, you know, personal trainers, physical therapists. This is the tools that we work with. But we have to be honest, many possible reasons why someone might be injured. You know, an ACL, God, if you look at the literature for ACL, there's absolutely biomechanical causes. Absolutely, there have been validated biomechanical.
But there's also a truckload of other factors. Yep. Yeah.
Same thing with the back and the spine. Yeah. I mean, and to things that people don't even think about, like nutrition, depression,
emotional. You know, yeah, absolutely.
Income level has been associated. You know, all kinds of stuff. So if I just say I'm going to fix your, you know, movement pattern, and you're not going to have back pain, that's not true. Now, I don't know that they would come out and say that for fact, but the idea is that if this is not as good as they say it is, I believe that's because it's based on biomechanics. But the other side of that is also what makes these exercises special. They're representative of, you know, concepts, and they're representative of, again, you know, these basic fundamental postures, although if you want to see some dysfunctional movement, watch a three-year-old play. So I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, you know, I know it really says. But, you know, the idea is that what makes these seven postures specific and or actually general to everybody? Why don't we have an FMS specific to football, an FMS specific to endurance
running? To baseball, to hockey, to, yeah.
Exactly. I don't see why there shouldn't be. Yeah. I mean, I understand in the theory of it is that, no, these are fundamental, but I disagree. I don't know why they're fundamental at all. And if they are fundamental, we have to prove that, you know. I know that this is based a lot on Gray and Lee's experience too, when they were developing it. I mean, let's not make the mistake. This thing is already like 10, 15 years old, but it's still, you know, it kind of requires the evidence to say that no, these are the ones, and it fits everybody, and we don't have that yet. So I suspect that if there's anything that's going to happen, something along those lines would happen. Either they're going to change or add it, or change it for different populations. And I personally think that might make it more valid, or may start to improve the numbers that we talked about as far as the specificity and the sensitivity. I don't see why that can't be done, or why it shouldn't be explored. You know, there's research going on now where they use a 100-point grading system, and that's just for a clinical research purpose, but they've already altered the movement screen by that definition, therefore. So I would personally like to see that occur, or at least be, you know, investigated, if we're really talking about using an FMS for, you know, every population alive. Because I sincerely doubt that you're going to have the same, you know, or in the least the same cutoff scores. You know, 14 was evidenced by that original football study, but they've started to see, you know, a little wiggle room with that. So in the least, even if the exercises stand, the cutoff points have to be validated. Using a 14 on grandma makes no sense. It makes no sense. I could use whatever number I wanted because I have no idea what number grandma might increase her risk of injury. You know, the other problem is too, things like a general population, because they're not involved in athletics, most likely, the type of injuries you see are typically more chronic in nature, unless they just kind of step off a curb and twist their ankle. And if that's the case, validating it for a general population will always be a difficult thing to do. They can do it. They can look at, you know, a year, 5 years, whatever they can do. But those are going to be some really long trials, and it's going to take a long time to get those type of studies done. So, and quite frankly, there's money to be made in that sense too, because of medical costs, but certainly more riding on the health of a professional football player being paid millions of dollars a year to stay healthy versus, you know, a general pop person that may twist their ankle or something. So,
okay. Two quick things. Number one, I think I don't like the argument of like testing a pro NFL player unless it's the, you know, the physical therapy and the athletic training staff that is making use of this test. Is that the case that's happening at NFL, or is it the strength coaches that are using it?
The strength coaches are using it, but that's fine if it's a screen. There's no problem, in my opinion, for a strength coach to use a screen. I mean, all personal trainers, in theory, all personal trainers take blood pressure and heart rate. that's a screen too. So there's and make no mistake, I mean, I truly believe that personal trainers, strength coaches are part of the medical health and fitness field. They have to be part of that discussion. They have to be that front line because that's who you see first. You know, if you if you're working with a personal trainer, you're not going to go to the orthopedic therapist physician before you talk to your personal trainer and go, my elbow hurts. What do you think I should do? You know, you're the personal trainers are the front line. That's why the ACSM pushes that concept. And that does require a certain amount of training and knowledge for personal trainers that may or may not exist as a whole just yet. But I think it's completely legitimate for a personal trainer to be given the ability to screen for injury.
Yeah, and I think that's the distinction between, you know, dealing with a, you know, a personal training client and an NFL star.
Right. But see, and that's the thing. So, you know, when we talk about people asking the question, you know, is it worthwhile? I think the answer is maybe, but you can't say yet. I don't know. I don't know the answer. And this was basically what Brian and I were discussing. I was taking an argument that we should use it. If I'm a, and this is where I would make the argument for its use. If I was a professional strength coach in the NFL, I would be interested in trying this because if I can identify anyone that might be injured through the season, that is worth, literally worth its weight in gold. And at least there's, you know, two studies that look at it. I would probably not be so quick to just throw it into my first team and go with it, but maybe I would want to take a look at like my second team, you know, and look at what happens to them through a season. You know, my practice squad or my second stringers, you know, and see if this actually seems to make a difference in what happens to them. You know, I would be a little bit nervous to apply it to my first stringers without knowing anything about it, but I would still be interested. But I think that that's an argument of, again, it's the cost benefit. So I'm looking at the cost of this, and there's financial cost too for the trainer, for the coach to buy it, to get certified. It's a low cost, but it's there. But the potential to save, you know, my quarterback from getting a high ankle sprain that season, that could be your season right there. You know, look at how many quarterbacks went down this year in the NFL alone. So if I believe that there is some, you know, good use of this for my in my field, I would be inclined to at least want to give it a try and run my own, you know, kind of evaluation of it and see if I could use this as a day-to-day kind of evaluation. If I was Joe Trainer, I don't know what this is good for. I really don't. I don't know if this will do anything at all. Like you said, Kev, it's kind of part of the evaluation process for many trainers, but I don't know that that is really evaluating anything because I don't know what it's telling. I don't know the information. And unless I'm going to be using overhead squats and the, you know, side brace thingamajammer exercise,
okay,
and then it's not telling me anything, you know.
Yeah, and I think the when it comes to people that are doing personal training predominantly, and I don't know if they talk about this in the, you know, the FMS seminars and stuff like that, but it's a sales tool primarily. When it comes to like new clients, it can be used as a sales tool. And I think, you know, we probably all have in the past said like, you know, you have this, this, and this going on and, you know, we can clean it up by doing this, this, and this.
Right.
So I think in that way, it is somewhat beneficial because it gives someone a statistical value that they can look at and say, all right, you scored this. And this is what, you know, is considered to be good. And you might not be, you know, good, or you might just barely be good. And, you know, we can do some stuff, retest in a month, and usually those numbers are going to be better just by doing some basic stuff. So I think in that case, it depends on how you want to look at it, but maybe it might be beneficial to people in that way to have the testing kit. Does that, I mean, I don't mean to make it sound shady, but you know, that is kind of part
completely,
of the sales process.
It's legitimate if the FMS is legitimate. It's completely legitimate.
And I think, I mean, you could say that about any movement.
Of, I understand. That.
Yeah, yeah. I think you could say. And I mean, I'm just throwing that out as a point.
But I think the FMS is, it's a good resource to have to give you some statistical feedback for people that aren't comfortable with doing assessments. We talked about the first time. I probably made it sound a lot worse than I meant to, but I think it's a good first step because a lot of people out there, it's going to be better than nothing. And I think it's like it's hard.
But
to
you don't
make
know that.
No, John, I think it's a real hard case to make because if someone doesn't know, like Lee said, if you have a NASM cert, great. But if you went with the NSCA, I don't know about. But like the NSCA, the CSCS test, they did not cover asymmetries whatsoever. You know, hearing about asymmetries, you know, luckily was when I was interning at Cressy's. Like otherwise I would, you know, like, oh, wait, okay, I have to look out for asymmetries and just make sure that, you know, there isn't gross issues with this person. Otherwise it could lead to serious injury. Again, unless there's a case where they play a sport where it's necessary for the performance.
Well, remember, though, that, I mean, asymmetry, and this goes back to what we were saying before, the idea of asymmetry, there's certainly evidence that suggests that asymmetries may lead to injury, but it doesn't all the time, and we don't know
not leading
why.
To injury, but leading to poor movement.
Right, but we don't know that poor movement leads to anything either, because remember, the FMS
asymmetries are a sign of poor movement, or they can impede movement, impede proper form.
Right, but what is poor movement? Name an athlete that you've ever seen that didn't have poor movement. I mean, some of them have brilliant movement.
Okay,
but
I'm not talking about an athlete. I'm talking about, Veronica, who's 40, you know, has a desk job, and, you know, I want to make sure that...
Then are we concerned about her poor movement?
There's no point, in arguing about this, because I think we're kind of talking about two different things.
It's sort of. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I'm playing a little devil's advocate, but that's. Oh, did we just lose a call?
Lee just bounced. She got out of there.
Oh, she did.
no, she really did. Okay. Well, John, is there anything else? No, she had to leave.
Oh, did she really?
Yeah, we've been doing this for 2 hours, John.
Oh, we have.
She has a life.
I guess. The what do you call it? I think the take home message for the idea of is it worthwhile is we don't know yet. And there was something actually Mike Boyle had quoted a surgeon saying you don't want to be the first to do something, but you don't want to be the last either. I think at this point in the stage in the research, we're still around that first area because right now there's still, you know, no evidence whatsoever for the different athletes or people, you know, endurance runners, crew, dancers, rehab patients, general pop. I've seen all these things being suggested as a population that should use the FMS. It has yet to identify previous injuries. We talked about the last time. And I'd forgotten about a study. I talked about a small subpopulation in one study, but there was another study. There was a much larger study that absolutely same thing. So we have two studies where previous injured were absolutely not identified to the point where they scored slightly higher than the average score of the entire population, which is mind blowing. There's no randomized control trials, so we don't know against a placebo of any kind or standard or anything. It's just they use it and then they report back the findings. So without a randomized control trial, which is a gold standard of evidence finding, we're not even close. And therefore we have greatly limited study quality, meaning that the way that the study it's not a knock against the people conducting the studies. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that we evaluate, you know, research and why one study has more power than another study. As of right now, all of the studies are poor. If someone did a literature review, they would say that every study is poor because none of them have great, you know, impact by the design of the study.
Cool. Can I propose something?
Yeah.
Okay. How about we table it for this week since we've talked for going on 30 minutes? And let's see if we can get some more feedback. I would love to get feedback from people that use the FMS and let us know what you think. And please, you know, you don't even have to give your name or anything like that if you don't feel comfortable with that. You know, it would be better, you know, better. But let us know what you think because, you know, again,
you're the audience, you have your opinion, and we think it's valuable. So you want to allow those opinions to come into the show as well. So this is what you can do. If you have an opinion, you can either message John or I on Facebook. You can email us at questions@thefickass.com. Use any one of those methods to get in your take on this, because like I said, you know, we have lots of trainers that listen to the show. And maybe if you are, you know, just an enthusiast and you've used the FMS with your trainer, to as in this initial assessment, let us know, you know, send that in, and we will come back to it one more time next week. We'll discuss it a little bit more. But for right now, let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back with some mailbag questions, so stick around. All right, so we're back here in the mailbag as we pause to watch some crazy NFL playoff action right now. To give you an idea of when we're recording this, but it's going to overtime. So let's go and grab a couple questions from the audience. John, I thought this might be a good one for you. Which one do you want? Number one or number two?
Oh.
The first one or the second one?
I guess, are they...
I think the first one, because you're in, you have some history of this. All right. This is from Jimmy. Hey, Fit Cast Crew. I just want to say, first off, you guys do a super tremendous job. I really enjoy all the podcast episodes, and you truly inspired me to get off my ass and do something I love. I recently opened my own small fitness studio in Toronto, Canada, and you all motivated me to do it and to do it right. For that, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. That is awesome, Jimmy. Awesome. Congratulations.
That's pretty awesome, yeah.
Now, on to my question. Oftentimes at Brazilian jiu-jitsu tournaments, they don't give us enough time to warm up. I've gone to tournaments where they tell me 5 minutes before my match that I will be competing next. In the past, I've gone into matches cold, which led me to tear my right pectoral muscle. Now I have no right pec. I still compete, but I'm not sure what warm-ups would be the most beneficial for me to do just before my match. Can you help a homie out? I don't know if this will help out at all, but they usually tell us around what time we may compete, but it's almost always 1 to 2 hours off. Sometimes it can be earlier, sometimes it can be later. Thanks a bunch for taking time to answer my question. I wish you all a happy holiday and a banging new year. So, John, what do you think? What do you got for Jimmy?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think that... it sucks about the right pec. I mean, that's a horrible injury. That's amazing that he's still competing. I think what you're doing, it's kind of like if you take away the BJJ part and you said, I have 5 minutes to warm up, what do I do? And it doesn't matter. The warm up should reflect what your needs are. That's your goal. So if you have 5 minutes to do that, you're going to pick the most important things. Now, based on the idea that he's got some significant pec issues, I would think some shoulder mobility and I guess some pec activation, things like that would probably come into play, some thoracic mobility. But in general, if you're looking at BJJ, you're probably looking at a lot of mobility, some hip mobility work, scapular mobility work, thoracic mobility. And you can do these things pretty quickly. You know, if you take the idea that a warm-up should elevate the core temperature too, you're going to want to be moving quickly. But as far as what to do in the warm-up, that's an individual thing. That's really just looking at where your points of concern are. You know, what's always tight on you? What's always painful to the foam roller? You know, if my calves are always painful, I probably want to do an ankle mobility. If I have shoulder issues, then I want to go back to that thoracic mobility and thoracic rotation and things like that, and some scapular activation work. So that's how you're going to evaluate it. Organize your needs and work through those needs, and you do whatever you can within that 5 minutes to address those needs. It doesn't have to be, you know, I mean, ideally probably want a 10-ish minute warm-up, but you can definitely get a lot accomplished in 5 minutes as well. So that would be my suggestion. Take the game planning before you get to the tournament so that you know exactly what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. Take any materials that you may need. So if it's, you know, bringing a stick with you to work on tissue quality, you know, before even, you know, that can be done throughout while you're waiting that 1 to 2 hour time window. You can sit there and, you know, every once in a while just giving yourself some soft tissue work. Until they give you that 5-minute warning and then go into your mobility and activation drills. You can use any type of, you know, there are certainly, you know, like small med balls and things like that that people can use for activation work. But again, it's evaluate your needs, prioritize those needs, and go from there. That's what I would say.
Hey, let us know, you know, how things go at the new place and if you have any other questions. Do you want to get that question from No Name?
Is that the next one there?
Yes.
I would love to do that. For a decade now, I've been watching myself get fatter, but I haven't had a clue what to do. I like hiking and biking, but fat makes that harder. So about 3 years ago, I started to try and change that and ended up listening to the FitCast. Having finally caught up to the most current episode, I have a nice, complicated question for all of you to talk about, if you would be so kind. But some more background first. He works from 4 a.m. to 12:30 for the TSA. He screens people. So he's on his feet most of the day, commutes about 2 hours a day, has two kids and a dog that don't like him going to sleep at 6 p.m. So he gets about 6 hours of sleep. Wife doesn't get home until 6 p.m. So he makes his own dinner. He's starting to like kettlebells, but the most local trainer wants $99 a month and they have classes after 6 p.m. He needs help on technique, but he's lacking ideas for resources to get it. He bought a Core 360 trainer and used Olympic barbell set and put them in the garage with a 10x10 space. He's got bands, suspension straps, door mount, pull-up bar. He's been lifting weights, deadlift, and bench and row once every other week inconsistently with kettlebells and blah, blah, blah. So questions are twofold. Where can he find a good resource for planning the food consumption of two adults and two kids with a healthier diet? And what would you do to plan a workout under these conditions, using the dog walks as much as possible to burn calories, to lift weights, swing kettlebells, gain muscle, and burn fat? Kevin, what do you got for my man?
For the first part, I was going to direct you towards Lee, just because she, you know, the big part of that comes is like the recipe part. And Lee has a fantastic database of recipes that are healthy, and she actually breaks down like the macronutrient ratios for everything. So you can get a good idea of what you're consuming in, you know, appropriate serving size and stuff like that. But I'll give you a quick primer for what you can do in terms of your training. First off, just make sure that you are covering your warm-ups. Like John was mentioning before, working on your tissue quality, the best thing that you can probably do is, pick yourself up a piece of PVC pipe, or you can get Perform Better's great foam rollers. Make sure you get the black one. It'll last you, you know, pretty much forever. And you can get, you know, there's tons of places where you can get, free warm-ups and advice on doing dynamic warm-ups from guys like Bill Hartman, Mike Robertson, Eric Cressy. They cover that stuff quite extensively. Just want to, you know, make sure you got that covered before we go into any of the other stuff. First thing, John didn't hit on this, but he's got about 45 minutes to train 3 times per week, roughly, and for his weight training. In terms of the kettlebell stuff, that needs coaching. There are DVDs and stuff out there. There's books out there, but you need to be coached, and you need to find a good coach, because I just kind of joined a commercial gym to join a basketball league, and trainers there do not know how to use the kettlebells. So you have to make sure that you go to a credible coach. And like RKC is a good, general rule of thumb. Make sure that they're RKC certified. They go through quite a bit of training, and they know what they're doing. They have a pretty good
understanding on how to coach the kettlebell movements to make sure that you don't end up going down and then not getting back up again. You know, a couple of people who have some, that have some good kettlebell stuff. If you just want to look at some videos and or maybe a DVD, Nagar, has some great stuff on her website, and you can just look her up. It's Nagar, F-O-N-O-O-N-I. Also Dan John has some great stuff on kettlebell training and, some good coaching cues that I've used with my athletes and clients to, really, you know, like John was talking about before, really simplifying the movement as much as possible. In, you know, as few coaching cues as you can get them to perform the exercise correctly and proficiently, safely. In terms of the programming, from what your goals are, which is fat loss, you know, full body workouts are probably going to make the most sense in your, with your lifestyle. And I would really say, look for a, you know, look for someone's stuff that you like. If there's a coach or a trainer out there, like if you like Alan Cosgrove's stuff, or, you know, you like his methodology, you know, pick up New Rules of Lifting. It's a good general outline to get started with to make sure that you have structured programs. And then from there, you know, there's so many programs out there that can, you know, get you to your goal, and using the equipment that you have in your house, you can adapt a lot of the stuff. For example, if you're going to be doing like a single arm dumbbell row, you can always use the kettlebells. You can do a suspended, like a TRX row, which I think you mentioned you had the straps, suspension straps, whether it be TRX or blast straps, doing a row that way. And if you can, especially when it comes to the deadlifting motions, make sure you can get that looked at. Either, you know, send someone a video, a coach a video, just to make sure that your deadlifts are looking good, because that is one of the more higher risk movements that you're going to be doing. Especially if, you know, if you're just starting to get into this. What else did I want to say? Other rule of thumb, make sure you're doing, you know, 2-to-1 push, pull to push ratio when it comes to the upper body stuff. You know, even with the lower body stuff, make sure you're doing 2-to-1 hip dominant to knee dominant. That's a general rule of thumb that I like to use with some you know, clients that might not be as best shape as possible, just to make sure we can reduce the risk of injury. There's tons of stuff that you can do with that. Again, I'm just trying to be as broad as possible. I can let you jump in a second, John. I'm almost done.
I'm not saying anything.
If you want to get into your own programming, best to stick with, you know, between 3 and 5 main lifts, main exercises, or exercises per workout with one main lift. That would be your, you know, your bench press or your, like your, you know, your chin ups, or it can be your deadlifts or your squats. And, you know, we said this a lot, but, you know, if you want to maximize your time, use multi-joint movements. You know, do lunges, do push-ups, do chin-ups, stay away from the, you know, dumbbell curl type stuff. And like I said, adopt stuff that you like and make sure that it's, you know, it's fun. But going back to the kettlebell stuff, make sure that you're performing the stuff correctly, because the last thing you want to happen is your wife to walk into the garage and have you be on the ground in pain, not able to get back up. That would not be a good thing. John, you're butting in. What do you got to say? What did I miss, man?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Also, I was going to say with the dog, you said you like to walk the dog for like 30 minutes of that period that you have to train. Do, if you want, you know, if your legs are good enough, do some sprint intervals with the dog. Trust me, your dog will be able to sprint for, you know, 15 seconds. Just go like 15 on, 45 off to get started. And do like 10 of those while you're taking the dog, and, you know, you can walk the rest of the way.
Right. It's a great way to get the dog active too, especially if it's a, you know, middle-aged dog or young dog that
did it with my dog on the beach today. Did some sprints on the beach with my dog. He loved it.
Yeah, they love it. Yeah, just and there's actually articles and reference that you can look up for how to train with a dog too. So simple Google search will tell you, because they have to be trained just like you have to be trained to be able to run distance. But yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, exactly what you said. It's a quick, dirty workout. You're looking, you know, he's looking for weight loss, and I think it actually works in his favor that he doesn't have a lot of time, because he's not getting a lot of quality sleep, and he's having difficulty with meal prep. which I agree. I mean, Lee would be better at that. I think simple meals, you know, Greek yogurt and wraps and salads and things that are quick and easy to prepare. You don't want to spend a lot of time. So you just, you know, bang, 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 just something that, you know, shake up a bag, you know, you buy those, you know, salads in a bag, shake it up and just, you know, throw it together with, you know, some grilled chicken breast that you made in a batch or something like that, and you're good to go. So it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be pretty simple. You know, don't forget things like, you know, trail mixes and nuts and things like that are good sources of protein and healthy fats. It doesn't require a whole lot of time or money to eat pretty well. You know, you just have to, again, look up the type of, they have all kinds of, you know, gourmet meals and under 5 minute kind of cookbooks, and they're some really good options. So I think something like that would be a valuable resource. But like I said, I mean, there's a lot of 30 minute or less workouts, circuits, supersetting, big movements. And I can't agree with Kevin enough. Be very cautious with those kettlebells, because it is a skill unto itself. And if you replace kettlebell with Olympic weightlifting,
holy balls, the Broncos just won.
Yeah, you saw that. Yeah, dude. Tebow owns Denver right now. But that's what I would say. I mean, if you were said, oh, I want to start Olympic weightlifting in my garage and I don't know how to do it, do you think that that's a good idea? I would put kettlebells along the same skill requirements. There are certain things that are easier to do with kettlebells, but there's a certain amount of skill, and you definitely have to use it, or the risk of injury because of the dynamic nature of a lot of the movements of kettlebells, even the stuff like the swings and whatever. You really have to make sure that you're doing this properly and that you're safe to do it. I would not be happy with anybody doing these things alone unless they are of a high skill level and are confident in those skills. You know, Nagar doing it by yourself in the gym, I don't think I'd worry. But, you know, otherwise, you got to make sure that you're on top of this, and that in my opinion does require coaching and a steep learning curve.
Cool. I think that's where we stop the podcast today. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Make sure to check us out on iTunes. Please submit a review there if you would like to. We would greatly appreciate it. And we will be back next week with round three of the FMS roundtable. And hopefully you guys will send in your feedback to questions@thefitcast.com, or, you know, send John and I a message through Facebook. You can easily find us through there. There's also a contact us part of the fitcast.com where you can send stuff in that way as well. And we're back. We're back for 2012. New season of the Fitcast. We will be having consistency for the coming
last season of the Fitcast, because the world's gonna end.
See you next week.
Hopefully.
All right, we're back for episode 229 for the off topic.
229.
And for season 8,
wild.
We're going into season 8 of the Fitcast.
Season 8. It's never a good sign.
Came back from hiatus. You know, we had a good job in the writing room. We came up with some great plot lines for this year. Yep. A huge
whole new
arc.
Direction. Yeah.
A whole new story arc. That's going to branch between this season and next if we get picked up. But those efforts at Sci-Fi decided to cancel us. So,
and if we make it the big bad of the season? Oh.
Think about it. It's like.
Seriously, how good was the last season of Buffy?
Oh, guys.
Never watched it.
Oh, Son of a... And you talk about all these like sci-fi shows and the one show you should be talking about.
I know,
it really is.
It really is quite amazing that Vampire a sci-fi Slayer. Show as you are, that you have never engulfed into the Buffy Angel world. I do find that to be...
Since the last time we recorded...
You can stream that on Netflix, Mr. Stream It on Netflix. You can stream it on Netflix.
I've been busy with other stuff. I've watched every episode of How I've Met Your Mother, or How I Met Your Mother, in the last 5 weeks. So,
which is a great show. You owe it not only to yourself, but to your unborn children, so that when they're growing up, you can tell them about the time that you watched Buffy.
So I can tell them about all these times where, like, I didn't meet your mother.
That was deep.
We keep up that attitude, and you never will.
And I do like how it's Bob Saget that does the voiceover for that.
Yeah, that's exciting for me too.
The first couple episodes, I was all about Robin. And I was like all about Robin. Then like in these later seasons, I'm like,
she's hot.
I don't know. You know who got hot? It's the chick from American Pie.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, who's in Buffy?
What?
Buffy.
Now the connection, full circle.
See, there we go.
She wasn't good looking in that.
Comes like that.
Full circle win.
Actually, Janie Willow, pretty attractive.
Did she get a job?
Yeah. I don't know.
No.
I would highly doubt it. Okay.
No, I think that she was just allowed to look like a woman.
Yeah. And she was like 30 in Buffy or something. Like she ages like ridiculously well.
Yeah.
Cool. Like Sarah Silverman.
Do you, Lee, do you follow the Buffy comic book series at all? I do not, but I do know once.
Okay. I bought the first two when they
totally
came out.
Talked about this a long time ago, but
no, whatever. What we talked about something. You don't even get to do that. You don't ever get to do that.
Yeah.
But no.
Holy crap! You're right. She's 37 years old. What?
But yeah, I got the first two right, and then I don't know. I couldn't do it after that. I couldn't. But I know people that still are following it like religiously.
Do you know what happens to Willow?
I don't. No.
Don't spoil it for me.
Would you like to spoil it? Yeah, this is going to be a spoiler alert. Would you like to spoil? I found this out and I was like, it was amazing.
Okay, well then make sure. Spoil, he's going to say something. What?
Okay, I'm
going to
spoil. So for all you, well, see, if they're reading Buffy, this happened like 3 years ago or something.
Okay, well then obviously it's not that big of a spoil. What?
Yeah, but apparently one of the plot lines, you know, Willow's like the good witch.
Witch now,
you know,
yeah.
Right. But in the distant future, she becomes evil Willow again, and Buffy time travels to the future and kills her.
No.
Yeah.
Not like doppelganger Willow, but like straight up Willow.
Straight up Willow. Yeah. Not vampire Willow.
I'm muting to find out when you guys finish talking about this.
Oh man.
Isn't that crazy?
That's some crazy.
I really wouldn't have
thought she went back to Vanny Willow. I mean.
Yeah. They said like the magics were that's. It's like impossible. Like everyone eventually turns.
Eventually,
evil.
It'll be take over to like the dark side, kind of.
And it was like way in the future. That was like 150 years because she's magic evil Willow.
Yeah,
because so
she like doesn't die at the normal place. So other people are like, it's like.
Yeah, if you look up the character on like Wiki says it too. It's like death of the character. Like she gets killed by Buffy.
Everyone ends up dying. I mean, it's like same thing with Angel.
Yeah.
If you watched Angel, I don't know if you. Watched
I didn't. It. I saw episodes, and I never watched the full season. And that's like my when I come home.
If you like the seventh season of Buffy, you will like Angel.
Yeah.
Some people didn't like it because it got too dark. But sixth and seventh got pretty dark, in my opinion. And you either liked it or you didn't like it. But if you like it, then you'll like Angel, I think.
I watched a few episodes. I want to say I saw the last episode. I definitely saw the episode with Cordelia.
It's just, you know, she's just a cast member.
Yeah. No, but I mean the one where her last episode.
Oh, you saw that.
I did see that. And I saw, which was really sad too. I also saw her Playboy, but I don't think that had anything to do with the show.
Her Playboy was hypnotizing.
Yeah.
Kevin, you can come back for that.
I'm back.
I was quite amazed by her Playboy. It was It was something to revel in.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah. Okay, Kevin, you can talk about Ancient Aliens. Fine.
Yeah, fine.
No, I'm just saying you guys gotta watch that. It's some crazy shit. and it's like it's so crazy. It's just over the line crazy.
Because isn't it on like a nonfiction channel, like History or something? Yeah.
it's on the History Channel, and it's just and it like features this guy with like hair that is just magnificent. But I'm just gonna say, if you guys have
like
Netflix,
any show.
Ancient Aliens, and it's like I'm one of those people that will like buy into this stuff. Like, I'm like, oh, you know what? You know, maybe aliens did come like tens of thousands of years ago and like start putting, you know, help the Mayans and, you know, started the first mines to get gold because their atmosphere, their home planet, needed gold for some reason to protect itself from the sun. So they came to our planet, harvested some gold, and then left. But they left all this stuff behind. That's why they're ancient aliens.
Wasn't that the plot of Cowboys and Aliens?
No. Cowboys and Aliens, the plot was crap.
That was exactly the plot of Cowboys and Aliens. Except they didn't help the Mayans, they killed the cowboys.
But the... oh man, it's some good stuff. And to be honest, some of it's like, all right, no, I believe you. No, I do.
No, you don't.
I'm dead serious. Like, I'm like, oh no, it makes perfect sense that like aliens were in Iraq, you know, 10,000 years ago. Makes sense.
Right, totally.
Pyramids. No, I bought into that. That's why I like Stargate. Got it.
Yeah. Bored. I see that.
And you're the professional that people turn to for the advice.
I'm telling.
To help their life. That's good. No. You have range. You have big range. That's great.
All I'm saying is, like, if you can't be open to the possibility, then when the aliens do come, you're the one that's going to be screwed.
Oh right. God! Then get the probes out and ready.
No, it's like I'm still like I stocked up on water for December.
Kevin, are you wearing a tinfoil hat right now?
Do you have your steel pyramids? There's different kinds. You wear them at different times on your head for energy sources.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I missed that episode. I haven't got there yet.
That's not an episode. That's just people.
Just don't wear them when you do yoga because you'll hurt yourself.
And speaking of that.
Did you see that article that I posted? It's an interesting article.
Yeah, it is.
Everyone go to my Facebook. It's an interesting article on yoga. Okay, go ahead.
Tons of people were up on that today. Some interesting stuff. But to be honest... One last thing I want to quickly talk about. The plot for the new Mission Impossible movie is for, it's for debilitating idiots.
Wait, this is the ghost product. What is it called? This is a new one?
Men in Black 3.
Oh.
This is the...
I thought you said Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Oh, well, no, Mission Impossible 3 is dope. I can't wait to see that.
That's why I was confused.
Yeah. But
so Men in Black 3 apparently is moronic, and you were expecting something else from the.
Did you see the trailer for that? The dude, like I hate dumb ass directors, producers, and writers in Hollywood. That this is my idea of time travel. I put on a watch. The watch says like 1970 on it. That's the day I'm going to.
You are a time travel purist, Kevin Larrabee.
Give it like a time and a date, not just like it's like in Austin Powers. He just types in 1969. Oh, okay, just any day, any time in 1969. No, we'll get there. Don't worry about it. It's just friggin' inaccurate.
I guess that's why our program has no writing, directing, or producing. It be.
Yeah. We can't.
Dude, that's Lost.
We can't deal with those kind of amateurs.
Look at Lost. Right. They never explain shit. But I have been rewatching Battlestar Galactica, which
pathetically.
Frack up some Cylons.
Wait, I'm shooting up what? What am I shooting?
Because you're Starbuck, remember?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to like some sort of weird heroin place. I don't know. I just heard the tail end. All of a sudden, I'm intravenous drug using. I don't know. Okay. I'm on board. I got
Starbuck. All right.
Lee, did you see my new picture?
That was
John, my new
camera. Did you get a new camera?
Did you get a camera? How is it?
Oh, which
is it everything you wanted and more?
It is magical and heavenly. Did we? Oh, we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, we did.
Because that was no. Did we? Because I thought that was the episode where all
connection was terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So for the audience, the last we haven't recorded, if you hadn't noticed, in like I think it's 4 years, and
dude, we are on hiatus. It was off season.
We were on hiatus. However, we did attempt this before Christmas, like weeks before Christmas, but we were having technical difficulties, and by technical difficulties, I mean Saudi internet sucks. Mm. But I was talking about the camera that I had ordered, which was the Sony Alpha NEX5N. And I got that over my last trip home, and it's magical, heavenly.
This is just
amazing.
You got some pictures that you took of it, or just with it on Facebook?
Yes, sir.
Cool.
So which like, so like the Home New Year's, are those taken with it?
Home New Year's, new camera.
What's up, Cameron?
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, no, the pictures are fantastic. They really are.
I love the camera's amazing. It's so good. I haven't even really taken I was taking low light pictures and it didn't even matter. It was like, and it was at like an ISO like 7,000 and there's no problem with it. You know, it's crazy.
Wow, that's some light intake.
It goes up to 12.8 and you'll get grain on that, but under like 6,000 or something, it's like you don't even know. The camera, though, it has settings where if you're doing something like you don't have a tripod or something, so you can't increase exposure, it'll take multiple pictures at the highest ISO and then compare them in the computer to see where the hot spots are and to eliminate them.
That's a thinking man's camera.
Right?
Wow.
It's pretty awesome. So
that's
just take
pretty
like
sweet.
Six rapid fire. Yeah, it takes six rapid fire pictures and then it'll clean it all out.
So some ancient alien believers believe that the aliens actually were the ones that destroyed the dinosaurs so they could create a slave race.
Oh.
Which is why we are here instead of the dinosaurs. Because since we theoretically have the ability to create hurricanes using a laser coming out of a satellite that heats up the ocean. Oh, the show's great. You guys gotta watch this. This is just what I remember between like, this is kind of my nap show where I like, I literally fall asleep. I fall asleep every time I watch it. It's so good. But like I'll wake up and be like, what the hell are they talking about? Did I just...
There are leagues of women everywhere falling asleep to QVC, but you're napping to Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. Okay.
It's quite a thing, even possible. Yes, it is. That's it for the off topic. I guess we're going to go into the main show.